From the heart of our nation's capital, here's Family Research Council President Tony Perkins. Sitting in today for Tony is our own Sarah Perry, Director of Partnerships for Family Research Council.
Welcome to Friday edition of Washington Watch. I am Sarah Perry, Director of Partnerships here at Family Research Council, sitting in for Tony Perkins on this chilly Friday afternoon. Well, a New York school district violated federal law, longstanding law at that, when it rejected a Christian student's request to start an on-campus Christian club. First Liberty Institute sent a letter to Wappinger's Central School District on Wednesday demanding that it approve freshman Daniela Barca's application to form the OMG Christian Club at Roy Ketchum High School. In just a minute, I'll talk with Jeremy Dice from First Liberty Institute. In my second segment, it is bad enough that some public libraries now host drag queen story hours, where young, vulnerable kids are exposed to cross-dressing men, some of whom have criminal records. But now, parents of high schoolers in Loudoun County, Virginia public schools were sent an email invitation encouraging them to bring their minor children to attend a drag queen fundraiser by a local community college, which the public school system approved. I'll talk with Natasha Grover, co-founder of Parent and Child Loudoun. At the bottom of the hour, an abortion rights group called the Texas Equal Access Fund has the perfect gift for all those hard-to-buy radicals on your Christmas list this year, a series of candles with a very Christmassy message: abortion is magical. Yes, you heard that right. And this is just the latest in an ongoing effort to portray abortion as some kind of positive in the culture. Together with the group Shout Your Abortion and the sacrilegious Thank God for Abortion public relations campaign. I'll have some thoughts. And at 42 past the hour, President Trump this week signed an executive order that would cut federal funding to colleges and universities that don't curb anti-Semitism against Jewish students. I'll talk to Liz Burney, Director of Special Projects for the Zionist Organization of America, about this encouraging and much-needed development. TonyPerkins.com is our podcast website. Follow Tony on Twitter at T. Perkins or me at Sarah P. Perry. Well, before we get into our show, I want to remind you all, and you are probably hearing lots of these messages, but specifically as we approach the end of this year, the battle for America's future is not over. Far from it. Will you partner with us so that we can continue to make a difference together in 2020? And when you give before December 31st, your gift will be doubled thanks to a generous year-end challenge match. Help us advance faith, family, and freedom for the sake of America. And to donate, call 1-800-225-4008. That's 1-800-225-4008. Or visit TonyPerkins.com. That's TonyPerkins.com. Well, a New York school district violated federal law and seemed to ignore that fact when it rejected a Christian student's request to start an on-campus Christian club. First Liberty Institute sent a letter to the Wappinger Central School District on Wednesday demanding that it approve freshman Daniela Barca's application to form the OMG Christian Club at Roy Ketchum High School. Joining me now with his analysis is Jeremy Dice, attorney with First Liberty Institute. Jeremy, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Hey, thanks for having me.
So as I understand it, the aim of this Christian student club is to offer faith-based support during biweekly student-initiated meetings where students can have discussions about living for God in a godless society. This is the purported mission of the club. But hasn't this long been established as perfectly legal in the United States as long as students organize it?
Yeah, very long time. This has been federal law. Look, if a school district recognizes one student club, it is not allowed to say that that religious club cannot join or enjoy the benefits of all the other clubs as well. In other words, it's a violation of federal law for this school district to welcome the Random Acts of Kindness Club, but say that the Christian club is not allowed to meet on campus.
Okay, so tell me about what particular law underlies this case? What's applicable to what we're dealing with here in New York?
Well, back in 1984, Congress passed a law called the Equal Access Law, and it said just what I said there a minute ago, that if the school district is going to have clubs on campus, it can do so, and that's perfectly permissible under the Constitution. But what it cannot do is open up those student-run clubs to just the clubs that they favor the speech of, so that if you're having, for instance, a gay-straight alliance club on campus, it would be impermissible to say then that a Christian club could not enjoy the same benefits of a student club that that club enjoys. And so that's been the law since 1984. It's never been overturned, although it has been challenged a couple of times in court, all the way to the Supreme Court. But it's still good federal law today. And for this school district to say that just because this is a religious club, we're not going to allow it to happen, is a very bright line violation of very clearly held federal law.
And this particular high school, Ketchum High School in New York, recognizes about 20 student clubs, including, and this is germane to our discussion here, the LGBT rights student group called Pride Club. So to me, to my mind, this looks like patent viewpoint discrimination and anti-religious hostility, which I think for First Liberty's part probably seems the same to you all.
Yeah, look, the most compelling thing in this entire case has been the fact that Daniela Barca, who's only 14 years old, she wanted to start this club back in the summer. And that's how excited she was to get this thing rolling. And throughout the whole process, you look, she makes the application, she talks to a potential supervisor or, you know, someone from a teacher that could watch them, a sponsor. They lose the application, they slow walk the process, they ultimately tell her verbally, no, you can't do this. She appeals to the assistant superintendent, her dad talks to the superintendent as well. Nothing comes of it all, even though they present along the way the law, the actual equal access law, to several of the school officials. They still deny it. But in part of the application process, she says to these school officials, I'm a Christian, and she makes that very clear. And then she goes on to say something very, very intriguing. Many times I feel like I'm the only one on my campus. Mm-hmm. And despite saying that to these school officials, saying that I feel alone in my faith, they still deny her this club, further isolating her from the rest of her peers, unfortunately. So it's good news in that we were able to send a letter on Wednesday, as you said, and really within a few hours, the school district has turned things around, and it looks like it's going to be January when the school board finally approves this student club, and Daniela and her friends, hopefully there's many of them, will come out and demonstrate to her that she's not the only Christian at this club, at the school, and this will be a thriving club for years to come.
You know, you brought up a great point, Jeremy, that this is an individual, this very brave young woman, comes in as a freshman, and I have a freshman in high school who is 15, and I understand that this is a period of real sort of, you know, fruit basket upset. These kids come into high school. High school's a big adaptation. It's a big adjustment. She's already sticking her neck out by saying, listen, I feel like I'm alone. She's made a stand, wants to organize the Christian club to find other individuals with whom she can pray, and the school denies her the opportunity to do that. So now she's taken the stand, the very bold stand for her faith, tried to organize the club. The school has denied her that opportunity. So she's sort of an island alone. In fact, I want to read her statement. And again, this is at firstliberty.org, where all of the cases that First Liberty is currently fighting can be found, and specifically Daniela's case. She said, quote, I am a Christian, but sometimes it seems like I'm the only one. I want to start this club for other students like me so we can support each other in our beliefs. The school district celebrates diversity and the right to express who you are. All I want is to be allowed to express who I am. Everyone deserves as much. What a brave and a smart young woman. So she's up against what you all have described as a stone wall and a slow walk on this process. What's the purported rationale that the school offers up as to why they haven't just greenlit this whole process?
Well, they did what a lot of school districts do, and they said, well, wait a minute, the separation of church and state thing that we've heard so much about doesn't let us support it in any way. And they actually said, look, if you want to do something after school, of course, you can do that. You can rent the facilities, they say, to use this as an after-school club or something like that. Well, I mean, that's a different analysis altogether, and of course they could do that under that policy. But the fact remains that the school district and the court cases that have discussed this bear this out. The mere fact that they allow students to use the facility during the school day to advance their club interests does not equate to some sort of endorsement or establishment of religion. It merely recognizes that our students have religious beliefs and that they're welcome to talk about those religious beliefs on campus. What becomes problematic is when the school district takes onto themselves the right to say, well, we allow this speech but not that speech, because that, as you said earlier, communicates a certain hostility to religion that is not there when it comes to other things, and the state, through the school district here, is supposed to remain neutral towards our religion instead. We've reminded them of that fact, and thankfully it only took a couple hours and the threat of a federal lawsuit, I guess, to remind them that they need to comply with federal law.
So Daniela Barca's father had gone all the way up to the assistant superintendent because they weren't getting anywhere with the principal. And the administrator at that level said that the school district could not support a religious club because it's not completely unbiased to any and all religions, that it was too selective. Again, pushing forward that notion of promotion of one viewpoint over another. And you have to believe that these administrators understand what the state of the law is. This isn't the first time, I'm sure, there has been a Christian student within the walls of that particular high school. So you all at First Liberty have said in your demand letter that Daniela's club be allowed to begin meeting no later than January 2nd. Now, you said that it looks good, but have you received up to this point any actual determination that that's the case?
Yeah, we have, as a matter of fact. And the school district has said that all that is necessary now is for the school board to approve it, as they do all the clubs when they come to approval time like this. And they will meet very early in January to do that very thing. And right soon thereafter, Daniela and her colleagues will be able to meet at school like every other club can as well. And this is a good reminder to students everywhere that you have these rights. In fact, the Department of Education has for years sent letters to all the school districts around the country to remind them of the responsibilities when it comes to the Equal Access Act. And so I suspect that that's something that school districts need to take more seriously. But look, if you're a student or a parent and you run into this situation yourself or just want to know what your religious liberty rights are, we have a toolkit available for you to review what those religious liberty rights are at firstliberty.org. Go to our website, download that, put it in your Trapper Keeper or whatever it is you take to school these days, and remember what it is, what your religious liberty rights are. And if you have a question about it, give us a call.
I'm so glad that you brought that up, Jeremy, because truly, without knowing what our rights are as parents and as children, we don't know what we're capable of doing. And that will sometimes impinge upon our desire to be bold in the face of hostility like this. Thank you for the good work you're doing on Daniela's behalf and on the other individuals that you represent. You're listening to Washington Watch. I'm Sarah Perry, Director of Partnerships, sitting in for Tony Perkins on this Friday afternoon. Well, coming up next, you've heard about drag queen story hours at public libraries. What about a drag queen fundraiser going through a public school system? I'll talk with Natasha Grover, co-founder of Parent and Child Loudoun, coming up next on Washington Watch.
Abortion is one of the most combative and sensitive moral and political questions in America today, even among Christians. There has been a renewed effort in theological liberal Christian circles to argue that the Bible does not oppose abortion. In light of these arguments, it is crucial for Christians to know what the Bible actually says about abortion. Does the Bible teach that life begins at conception or birth? Is abortion murder? In FRC's new publication titled Biblical Principles for Pro-Life Engagement, Personhood, Scripture, and Church History, author David Clausen addresses these questions with relevant passages in the Bible that inform how a Christian should think about abortion, the question of personhood, and a survey of how prominent church leaders have interpreted these passages throughout history. Learn more by visiting frc.org/unborn. That's frc.org/unborn.
Meadow Pollock was a high school senior who was tragically gunned down during the Parkland school shooting in Florida. In an emotional and gripping FRC Speaker Series event, her father, Andrew Pollock, and education expert Max Eden discussed the tragic massacre and the politically correct policies that allowed the Parkland shooting to happen. The Southern Poverty Law Center and the Obama administration promoted a false narrative that teachers and principals were racist and couldn't be trusted to enforce rules with consequences. Instead, they argued for healing circles and restorative justice. These policies enabled a psychopathic criminal to maintain a clean background and purchase a firearm used to murder 17 people at the high school. The Obama administration forced these leniency policies into hundreds of schools, serving millions of students across America. To listen to this event and to learn more, visit frc.org/speakers. That's frc.org/speakers.
Religious liberty is one of the most important yet misunderstood issues in America. There's a growing perception that protecting religious liberty is an attempt to lawfully allow bigotry and prejudice. Therefore, Christians need to be able to articulate with greater clarity and persuasiveness why they support religious liberty. Biblical Principles for Religious Liberty, Evidence from Scripture and Church History, is a new publication from Family Research Council that presents biblical and theological arguments for why religious liberty is worth defending and encourages Christians to engage in the fight to preserve America's first freedom. This publication presents key biblical texts that support a broad understanding of religious freedom and key theological arguments based on those texts. In an increasingly secular world, Christians must understand and advocate for religious liberty. Learn more by visiting frc.org/belief.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. It's a little Mannheim steamroller. I grew up listening to those guys, which probably dates me. I'm Sarah Perry, sitting in for Tony Perkins today. 1-800-225-4008 is our donation hotline. Help us help you and the belief and faith, family, and freedom this year with an end-of-year donation. 1-800-225-4008. Well, it's bad enough that they are hosting drag queen story hours at public libraries where young, vulnerable kids are exposed to sexually confused and cross-dressing men, some of whom have criminal records. But now, high school parents in Loudoun County, Virginia public schools were sent an email invitation to bring their minor kids to attend a drag queen fundraiser at a local community college, which the public school system approved. It's being hosted by Northern Virginia Community College on February 21st, 2020 in Sterling, Virginia. And for a $5 donation, you can bring your 12 and under kids. Joining me now is Natasha Grover, co-founder of Parent and Child Loudoun. Natasha, welcome to Washington Watch.
Hi, Sarah. Thank you for having me.
Well, I got to tell you, I read this story and my first response was infuriation. How was your initial response? Different than mine or the same as mine?
I've been following what's been going on around the country and as well as in Virginia and locally. So I wasn't surprised at all. This has become sort of a culture within school systems and libraries all over the country to promote this sort of a thing. So I wasn't surprised. I mean, I was pretty angry about it, but not at all shocked.
Well, it almost is at this point not surprising from the standpoint that we are sort of morally adrift in the world right now, and particularly in schools. So this was an email that was not sent directly from Loudoun, Virginia Public Schools, but it was sent with their permission and blessing. There's a national third-party group based in San Diego called Peach Jar, which has access to all of the parents' emails. So how did NOVA give access to all of these emails and send them something so inappropriate?
Well, the Peach Jar did not, as far as I'm aware, give the email addresses to the community college. What they did was send out the advertisement flyer to the parents on behalf of the community college with the school district's blessing. So
okay.
Peach Jar has access to the email addresses, but I am not aware that they give those to any of the organizations that upload flyers to them.
All right. So tell me what the verbiage was on the bottom of each Peach Jar email that went out to these parents.
Oh, sure. It says, this email has been sent to you by Peach Jar on behalf of Loudoun County Public Schools. Only school-approved flyers are sent to you through Peach Jar.
Oh, okay. Well, that gives you a sense of where the public schools in that area come down on the issue. So one parent, whose name was Denise, received the flyer and wrote an email to the superintendent and the school board. And what did she say in her email?
She said, I am deeply disturbed by the Peach Jar flyer sent out today. Disturbed actually doesn't even reach the depth of how affected I am by this flyer. It's sickening. The subject line in the email is the usual, one school announcement or opportunity for your child. By sending out this flyer, I feel I am being forced to conform to the liberal mindset that a drag show is something that should be announced to all families. I'm sorry, but I believe this is not an appropriate announcement, and I definitely don't want my child to hear about it either, nor do I believe that this is an opportunity for them. Continuing on, this is an insult to Loudoun County families. You, as representatives of Loudoun County Public Schools, should not assume that I, nor many, many other parents, have the same values as you, because we certainly do not. You all should be ashamed. Can you please support all parents and not just liberals in Loudoun County? I'm tired of this passive abuse. End quote.
Well, I would like to shake this woman's hand, because we talk a lot about being bold on this show. And I tell you what, she really nailed the issue here and used this as an opportunity to speak up. So some Christian nonprofits, like, for example, Fellowship of Christian Athletes, have been denied access to send out invitations to the parents through Peach Jar because Loudoun County Public Schools thought they were inappropriate, which, again, not being surprised with the political climate at this day and age, it's a bit of a double standard, isn't it?
Right. I was told by an LCPS parent, I don't like to use that acronym because most people don't know who they are, a Loudoun County public school parent involved with the Fellowship of Christian Athletes, that a flyer for a Fields of Faith event was previously denied due to the content.
So you called Robert Doolittle. He is the director of communications and community engagement. But I'm guessing you didn't get an answer to your question because you ultimately had to file a Freedom of Information request, didn't you?
Yeah, he told the secretary he wasn't taking my call. So I did. I filed a Freedom of Information request online. They have a process on their website. And I asked for all the electronic communications between the Loudoun County Public Schools and Peach Jar about this specific drag queen show fundraiser flyer, ID number 891042. So we'll see how that goes. I think I have about 5 days to get me my information.
Well, we may be having you back on this program to let us know exactly what that FOIA request resulted in, because the irony is that they've adopted an electronic flyer distribution platform back in 2016. But it really does provide a little bit of a tracking opportunity, doesn't it? You're sending things out over email and you can get them over email as well. Natasha Grover, parent, activist, fighter, co-founder of Parent and Child Loudoun, has been my guest. You're listening to Washington Watch. I'm Sarah Perry, sitting in for Tony Perkins. Coming up next, an abortion rights group called Texas Equal Access Fund has the perfect gift for your radical friend. A series of candles with a very holiday message. Abortion is magical. You heard that right. We'll be right back on Washington Watch.
The topic of sexual sin can be difficult to discuss in the church, but it's something that needs to be addressed. To help inform this conversation, FRC has a new publication for church leaders called Safeguard Your Ministry from Moral Failure. In it, Dr. Jesse Gill, a licensed psychologist, specifically addresses sexual sin and the susceptibility of those in church leadership. He discusses the contributing factors to moral failure, a practical understanding of our sexual nature, and a call for Christian leaders to increase their dependency on Christ. The principles found in this publication will instruct leaders in meeting their emotional, relational, and even sexual needs in healthy ways so that there will be less of a foothold for temptation. Safeguard Your Ministry from Moral Failure is a must-read for everyone involved in church ministry. To read the publication and learn more, visit frc.org/safeguard. That's frc.org/safeguard.
Are you a parent of a school-aged child? If so, then you understand that navigating your educational system is one of the biggest challenges facing families across the United States today. Family Research Council's new publication titled The SPLC's Teaching Tolerance, What Parents, Teachers, and Administrators Need to Know, helps parents identify and monitor a specific agenda that is being pushed on their children in public schools. The highly partisan left-wing Southern Poverty Law Center is one of the greatest offenders on this front with their program titled Teaching Tolerance. This program is designed to infiltrate schools with radically progressive education resources that undermine Christian values about marriage and family. FRC's brochure outlines the content within the SPLC's Teaching Tolerance Project and empowers parents to protect their children against the SPLC's agenda. Learn more at frc.org/teachingtolerance. That's frc.org/teachingtolerance.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I am Sarah Perry, Director of Partnerships here, sitting in for Tony on this Friday afternoon. A reminder, TonyPerkins.com is today's podcast website. There you will find resources and guest information, including an opportunity to match our year-end campaign by December 31st. TonyPerkins.com is the podcast website. You can also, by the way, call our donation hotline at 1-800. Wait a minute. We need to remember what our donation hotline number is. 1-800-225-4008. That's 1-800-225-4008. Or just go to TonyPerkins.com. We spent a lot of time there anyway, and it's listed for you. Well, you're not going to believe this. In the latest attempt to sanitize and promote abortion, and why wouldn't we? After all, we are considering legalizing abortion up until the day and the moment itself of birth. We have fallen so far morally. An abortion rights group called Texas Equal Access Fund, TEAF, has the perfect gift for all of your radical friends who are having trouble figuring out what they want: a series of scented candles, including in gender-neutral teal, with a very Christmassy message: abortion is magical. Super hip colors, hot pink, purple, sparkly gold, and the aforementioned gender-neutral teal. It bears a striking resemblance to Catholic prayer candles. I'm sure that's not intentional. In their December 4th Facebook post, TEAF proclaims, "Getting our holiday party favors ready. Every year we honor our volunteers and make sure they get a token of appreciation at our annual holiday party. If you volunteer for TEAF, which raises money to help women afford abortions in Texas, apparently you can earn yours for free." Now, it's not clear whether TEAF will also be offering the candles for sale, but the comments seem to imply that there are several supporters interested in purchasing. Now, in a separate post, TEAF says they stand by the adjective of magical, saying, quote, "Abortions are magical for most people who have them." Going on to say, "Refuting that just increases stigma around abortion. They are healthcare, self-care, and community care." I have gone in for medical exams, none of which I would describe as magical. In fact, the fact that they caused a magical connection indicates the left's double standard and their hypocritical approach to calling abortion health care. Health care is not magical in any stretch of the imagination. And this is highly offensive to those of us who ascribe to a morally centric worldview. Those of us who are Christians, on several levels, we understand abortion is murder. So to take something as horrific as abortion and turn it into something magical is nothing short of mind blindness and mental illness. Christmas, at its core, is actually about a very special, unplanned pregnancy. So it seems odd to celebrate killing babies in unplanned pregnancies as part of the holiday season. And even some abortion rights supporters are calling it tasteless, because it is, and a little repulsive. No reference is made to the regret that most women experience who get abortions. Not a single woman that I have ever known of, including friends of mine who have had this experience, have ever gone skipping into an abortion clinic and left the better for it. Many mourn the end of the life in their womb. There is no reference made to the nightmares, the tendency to gravitate toward self-medicating the pain through drugs, alcohol, and promiscuity. We women are not ignorant or stupid, despite the abortion rights rhetoric, and you can't make it right with a scented candle. It's abundantly clear abortion ends not just a physical condition, but a human life. Despite all the evidence, TEAF wants to ignore the seriousness of the procedures. Abortions, they say, quote, provide new beginnings for people trying to create a future for themselves that may have been unimaginable without their abortion. So why not end the future of the life inside your womb? This is all part of the continued push to make abortion positive and palatable in some twisted way, like the Shout Your Abortion campaign, as if having an abortion is something you ought to shout from the rooftops. And just last month, the most recent attempt to make abortion sellable was the Thank God for Abortion campaign. One photograph shows two lesbian moms posing with a baby conceived, one would think, through artificial insemination. And the baby is wearing a onesie. Thank God for abortion. Well, if you're as repulsed as I am, stay tuned here at FRC as we participate in the March for Life next month. And remember to always call out sin where you find it, because a dark world will be dark as long as we keep our lights hidden. You're listening to Washington Watch. I'm Sarah Perry. Coming up next, I'll talk with Liz Birney, Director of Special Operations for the Zionist Organization of America, about the president's new executive order on anti-Semitism. We'll be right back on Washington Watch.
News. We can get it from many sources, but what can you trust these days? Where can you get news that doesn't make you as suspicious as you are informed? If you're looking for something better, for honest coverage of the latest news, one trusted news source I look to is the Washington Times. When preparing for the radio program and selecting guests to join me on the show, I will often read the Washington Times and have their reporters join me here on the program because I trust how they cover the news. Join me and more than 7 million readers who turn to the Washington Times every month to get real, trusted news. For a limited time only, listeners of Washington Watch with Tony Perkins will receive a special annual rate of $69.95 for the first year. Subscribe to the Washington Times and get this special offer by using my name and visiting washingtontimes.com/Tony Perkins. That's washingtontimes.com/Tony Perkins.
radical abortion laws in New York, Illinois, and Vermont are challenging the sanctity of life. These laws have lifted the few existing restrictions on abortion in the name of family planning and mental health of pregnant mothers. Americans need to take a stand and defend the rights of the unborn. Family Research Council is sending Congress 90,000 baby hats as a reminder that babies should be welcomed with love and warmth, not potential danger. Supporters have already funded over 45,000 hats. We are over halfway there. Join Americans across the nation and donate $9 to send a powerful reminder that young lives need to be cherished. When you take action, we'll send you an end birthday abortion certificate that will remind you to pray for born alive babies who are facing the danger of being killed outside the womb. Visit endbirthdayabortion.com for more information. That's endbirthdayabortion.com.
Hello, this is Tony Perkins, President of the Family Research Council here in Washington, D.C. I want to invite you to join Luana and myself, along with Lieutenant General Jerry Boykin, former Congresswoman Michelle Bachmann, for FRC's Israel Tour, June the 2nd through June the 12th, 2020. Whether you're sailing on the Sea of Galilee, standing in the ruins of Capernaum, or journeying up to Jerusalem, Israel is unlike any other place on earth. You'll relive the final earthly days of Jesus as you pray in the Garden of Gethsemane. You look upon Golgotha and stand in the Garden Tomb. The reality of his story will come alive in a transformative way. This one-of-a-kind tour will not only allow you to explore the land of the Bible and the roots of our Christian faith, you'll also hear firsthand from some of Israel's political, defense, and religious leaders. Join us June the 2nd through June the 12th for this life-changing experience. For more information, visit TonyPerkins.com or call 844-872-5155.
It's beginning to look a lot like Christmas everywhere you go.
Well, that's a great way to start a segment, isn't it? Merry Christmas to all of you who are listening. Happy Hanukkah to our Jewish friends. This is Washington Watch, and I'm excited about the segment we'll discuss. But before we get to it, I'm going to talk to you again about our year-end goals. The battle for America's future is nowhere near over. We need your partnership with us so we can make a difference next year on behalf of the values that we hold so dear. When you give before the end of this month, your gift is going to be doubled thanks to a generous year-end challenge match. Help us advance faith, family, and freedom for the sake of America. To donate, call 1-800-225-4008. That's 800-225-4008. Or visit TonyPerkins.com. That's TonyPerkins.com. President Trump signed an executive order Wednesday that would cut federal funding to colleges and universities that don't curb anti-Semitism against Jewish students, aptly timed after murders in a kosher grocery store in New England. Let's listen to what he said during his introduction of the executive order.
As we gather this afternoon, our thoughts turn to the grieving families in New Jersey. Yesterday, two wicked murderers opened fire at a kosher supermarket and killed four innocent souls, including a brave police officer who faced down the shooter. With one heart, America weeps for the lives lost. With one voice, we vow to crush the monstrous evil of anti-Semitism. Today, we're taking another historic action. In just a few moments, I'll sign an executive order to combat anti-Semitism. This action makes clear that Title VI of the Civil Rights Act, which prohibits the federal funding of universities and other institutions that engage in discrimination, applies to institutions that traffic in anti-Semitic hate.
Trump's new order is set to hit the Boycott, Divestment, and Sanctions Movement, or BDS, head-on. This order invoked Title VI of the Civil Rights Act of 1964 to fight anti-Semitic rhetoric on college campuses, which all metrics indicate to us is increasing at an alarming pace. It calls on federally funded agencies to adopt the International Holocaust Remembrance Alliance definition of anti-Semitism in cases of discrimination. Joining me now with her analysis is Liz Burney, Director of Special Projects for the Zionist Organization of America. Liz, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Hello?
Welcome back to Washington Watch, Liz. Liz, can you hear me?
Hello? We have a terrible connection. There's a pretty hard rainstorm in New York, and that may be affecting the cell towers.
Liz, we may want to have you call back and see if your connection could be better the next time. Well, let me just indicate to you that there was a distinct disparity between right-wing groups and left-wing groups in their response to President Trump's executive order. President Trump, who has established himself to be a friend of Israel, who has made good on his promise to move the embassy in Jerusalem to its site in Jerusalem. This has been a president that has taken measures that we have long prayed and hoped for as friends of Israel and the Jewish people. And finally, we have seen some movement. Major Jewish groups applauded the Trump administration on Wednesday for this order affirming civil rights protections for Jewish students amid concerns over rising anti-Semitism on American campuses. So, Liz, we're going to try again. Liz Burney is with Zionist Organization of America. Liz, we're so happy to have you back on Washington Watch.
Great. Thank you. It's so wonderful to be back. And thank you again for all of your great work.
Well, you must be as thrilled as we are by President Trump's executive order.
Absolutely. We put out two press releases on it this week. We felt that it was a Hanukkah present to all of the Jewish students on campuses throughout the country. We praised other organizations that praised this order. It's really a wonderful step, and it's a culmination of, for us, for over 15 years of work on this exact issue.
Well, Chris and I, Chris Gasek, have studied the issue, Chris himself particularly. And in fact, the paper that we originally wrote on this a few years ago appears at TonyPerkins.com for those of you who are going to go to our podcast website about the left's silence on this frightening tide of anti-Semitism on American campuses, something we never in our wildest visions ever believed we would have to be dealing with in this day and age. So what was it about this particular executive order that ZOA and you specifically found to be the most pleasing?
Well, I think there are several aspects. One is that it helps to confirm the rights of Jewish students to have a welcoming and safe from harassment and intimidation environment on college campuses under Title VI of the Civil Rights Act of 1964, and that's something that we've worked on since 2004. Susan Tuckman, who is the head of ZOA's, the Zionist Organization of America's Center for Law and Justice, started working on that very issue in 2004 and did a six-year battle to have the Office of Education, which is the organization, the Education Department, which is the department that enforces the Civil Rights Act, say that Jewish students could qualify under the under Title VI. And then we've been, trying to enforce this on campuses throughout the country whenever there have been anti-Semitic incidents and administrations that failed to act. And it's been very helpful. A lot of times when an administration is faced with the Title VI, the possibility of the Title VI administrative action, they will come to the table and they'll start taking action. It's really sad that we have to force them to. With almost any other group, they'll act right away. But it seems somehow if Jews are harassed or discriminated against or told to get off campus or people scream for the death of Jews, Intifada, that's the killing of Jews. As you know, the Intifadas in Israel, thousands of Jews were maimed and murdered, and they scream for this on college campuses. It's very frightening. And, so now there's an important tool, and it strengthens that tool. It also strengthens the use of the International Holocaust Remembrance, the IHRA's definition of anti-Semitism which will, you know, which we have been trying to employ in college campuses also.
Now, tell me why that particular Remembrance Alliance definition of anti-Semitism is important here. Why should that be something that's adopted?
Because that's something that covers some of the terrible things that have been happening. For instance, if, you know, you say that, you know, Israel shouldn't exist, you don't have, if they're calling for the death of Jews, if they're engaging in these, you know, overt, extreme types of anti-Semitism and sometimes hidden as anti-Israelism. I mean, one of the techniques of the left is to say, oh, no, I'm not an anti-Semite, I'm just an anti-Zionist or anti-Israel. But it's really interchangeable because a lot you'll see what happens when they're yelling, you know, for death to Israel, they're yelling for death to Jews, too. And they really interchange them. But, you know, when they're confronted with the fact that it's anti-Semitic, then they try to pretend that they're making a distinction.
Now, ZOA praised the president for the EO, but specifically mentioned, and this is in relation to what I said in my opening remarks, that there are some left-wing Jewish groups, such as ADL and the Reform Movement, that are, quote, strongly condemning the executive order. Why in the world would organizations who are affiliated with Judaism, who are purportedly speaking on behalf of American Jews, somehow condemn an order designed to protect them in American academics?
Well, actually, ADL praised this one. You know, we've had many differences with them, not doing the right thing on other issues, but this time they did praise it. They did the right thing on this one, so we were pleased about that. The Reform, as far as we can tell, said nothing, which I find problematic. The Conference of Presidents of major American Jewish organizations praise the executive order, which is good because it's an umbrella organization of many organizations. We had more organizations than, you know, has happened on some of the other issues praising this, which we were pleased to see that. The far left groups like J Street condemned it. And other groups, you know, we were a little bit concerned about, you know, some of the other groups who sort of were, you know, gave it faint praise and were also, you know, suddenly talking about, oh, you know, free speech rights and so on, which is absurd. So the J Street, it just goes against Israel and against Jews on just about every issue. And I think this really shows J Street's true colors because if they're against trying to protect Jews on campus from anti-Semitism, that really says a lot. That really says a lot about who they are.
Yes, absolutely. And J Street, in fact, critiqued this as somehow having a chilling effect on free speech and a crackdown on campus critics of Israel. Do you think that's an accurate assessment of what this executive order is designed to do?
Could you ask that again? I'm not sure of what you were asking.
So J Street has talked about this measure having a chilling effect on free speech, but that's not really an effective description of what this is. There are certain categories of speech that are not protected. So they're not being, they don't seem to be intellectually honest here.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. Of course, if you're calling for the death of Jews, you're saying Israel shouldn't exist, which is basically calling for the death of millions of Jews. That's not something that, you know, I would call within the realm of free speech, screaming Jews get off of campus. And you're also talking about, you know, that colleges should not be federally funding this type of speech. And you have, for instance, UNC, University of North Carolina, had this hate fest, which has been mentioned in a lot of the articles about the executive order, in which, ZOA was the one who filed the complaint about it. And the hate fest was financed with $5,000 of federal funds. Mm. So the United States surely has the right to say that we're not going to use federal funds to fund anti-Semitism. So it isn't even really a free speech issue because the Supreme Court has said that the government does not have to fund speech that it disagrees with.
Absolutely. And we know that at least in terms of congressional response to this, there is bipartisan praise. So it seems to me that organizations like J Street and the pro-Palestinian groups who are accusing Trump of trying to silence Palestinian rights activism don't really have a thorough understanding of what this is designed to do. Bipartisan praise in Congress, where David Crone, chief of staff to former Senator Harry Reid, said, I know people are going to criticize me for saying this, as he's a Democrat, but I have to give credit where credit is due. So we were encouraged to see individuals on Capitol Hill, their staffers saying, listen, we don't agree with the man on much, but this is a need, and he took swift action to address it. So you have to be pleased by that.
Of course. One of the reasons why this was necessary, by the way, was this passed overwhelmingly in the Senate, I think even unanimously, a bill that said pretty much the same thing, the Anti-Semitism Awareness Act, back at the end of 2016, it may have passed again, but it was never voted on, unfortunately, in the House. I'm glad to see the favorable bipartisan response now. That's encouraging. It's encouraging because what the Jewish students have been suffering and, you know, the fear that they have on college campuses is just awful.
Well, we read very frequently the Allgemeiner, which is a Jewish publication. They have actually cataloged the worst colleges and universities in America for campus anti-Semitism. Allgemeiner.com is their website, and I encourage our listeners to go there to learn more about where this problem is the most endemic and where it represents a very frightening trend, a movement toward the ultra-left that disenfranchises a group of individuals who automatically would have at one stage signed on to the Democratic Party, thinking that they are being supported and represented and their interests are at stake. But this is now the party of the squad and individuals like Ilhan Omar, who call out, quote, white nationalism when they are talking about the shooting at the kosher deli in New Jersey. These are the kind of Democrats that we are dealing with. And in fact, the mayor there in New Jersey said that the market was indeed targeted. So I loved the fact that Trump said, we are mourning with one heart. Now is the time to act, because this is an individual who recognizes that this is a very dangerous pendulum swing.
Yes, very dangerous. And, you know, these were this was like a black extremist group that shot the people and the police officers and these innocent police officers, innocent Jews, an innocent non-Jewish worker in the kosher grocery. And if you saw the videos of what happened, they bypassed tons of other stores and went straight for the kosher grocery. So it's obviously this was a targeted anti-Semitic attack.
I've got to let you go. This has been Washington Watch with Tony Perkins. 800-225-4008 to participate in our matching campaign. I've been Sarah Perry sitting in for Tony Perkins. TonyPerkins.com for more information. And we'll catch you next time on Washington Watch.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is powered by the Family Research Council and is entirely listener supported. For more information on anything you've heard today, or to find out how you can partner with us in our ongoing efforts to promote faith, family, and freedom, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.